Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Market View Wrap on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero in the studio with me, finance presenter JP Ong, and on the phone with us, Jeff Howie, strategic market analyst from the SGX. It has been a phenomenal week, really an adventure ride almost, but there is so much news and so much information to pass through. The only thing that I am going to say before I turn it over to the experts is right now the SDI is down 0.24% to 2,444 points. JP, lay the stage.
Let me correct you first. That's expert in singular, that would be Jeff. I am here to just observe and throw the snide commentary often. Regardless, you are right. And it seems that we might be set for five straight days of losses this week. A very strong risk-off sentiment, at least for investors here in Singapore and across the Asia-Pacific. 2,444, you're correct. That is a 0.25% decline, down by just about 6 points. So, it's not that big of a step down for the Straits Times Index. We are seeing a lot of trading activity today, about 978.5 million Singapore dollars in total value turnover at this particular junction. When you look at the rest of the region at the moment, most markets are also trading in the red today. The Nikkei 225 has fallen by 0.9%. The ASX 200 trading about 0.5% in the red. You do have the South Korean Kospi also falling by 1.1%, and the Taiwan Weighted Exchange in Taipei falling by 0.4%. The Shanghai Composite, again, is trying to stay alive, and they are holding on to a very slight gain of just 3 points. That's not 3% or 0.3%. That's 3 points for the Shanghai Composite. The Shenzhen Bourse finds itself down by 0.4%, and the Hang Seng trading about 86.5 points in the red. Of course, a lot of this risk-off sentiment is because we have a very huge week coming up, and front and center, some might say, is the U.S. elections come on November 3. Many folks are going to be watching out for whether or not the polls are right, and if we are going to see a changing of the guard in the White House, or if U.S. President Donald Trump can actually pull off another upset like in 2016. But then again, we've also seen a lot of volatility introduced in the markets. Case in point, on Wednesday, not only did we see the Dow, the S&P, and the Nasdaq, which, by the way, recovered a bit on Thursday session, but Wednesday we saw them tumble by about 3.5% each. Also telling is that volatility, or the VIX index then, spiked by about 20% higher during that time, just showing that there's a lot of uncertainty, not just surrounding the U.S. elections, but also surrounding these rising COVID-19 infections that has now shut down Europe's two largest economies, Germany and France, and this calling into question again whether or not the economic recovery will be uneven. This, of course, matters to Singapore also, because Singapore is such an open and externally driven economy, very much trade dependent, also, and sensitive to a lot of these happenings across the world. And something that perhaps just has folks maybe not really running for the hills, but definitely trying to find a little bit of shelter and trying to wait things out and really assess the landscape as all of these things unfold, because there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding these particular events. And I think that's what's keeping folks at least a bit on the back foot for the most part. As we mentioned, the SGX down, but not as much as, say, yesterday or Wednesday's tumble. We are seeing only a 5-point decline for the local benchmark today.
All right. Now, before we bring Jeff into the conversation, a big day for the SGX, the listing of Nanofilm. They opened strong. They were at 280 shortly after the opening. The stock is now at $3. Jeff?
Yeah, well, look, technology, I think, has been focused across the world and across the region. You know, across the world, there's been a little bit of, I guess, some repricing of the market for the increased expectations of a Joe Biden win next week, and that's seen the banks lead the S&P 500 lower this week. I think top five U.S. banks average a 6% decline so far this week, and of course we've seen some volatility in the tech sector as well. And of course, the pending listing of Hangzhou-based digital finance services giant Ant Group has also had a lot of focus. So tech stocks still very much in focus. I think our iEdge FactSet Global Index is at 8% this month, bringing its accumulated total return in the past 10 months to around 65%. But indeed, the focus of trading in the local market today is, of course, our debut of Nanofilm Technologies International, which we call NTI. It's one of Asia's leading providers of nanotech solutions, and it's made its debut this morning with a whopping $250 million in turnover in the AM session alone. So the stock's trading now at $3 a share, and that's up 16% from the IPO offer price of $2.59. And it also means its market cap is also very close to $2 billion now. And I think it shows a number of strengths. It shows, firstly, our investors really do understand this nanotech business of proprietary material and coding technology, which it's a lot more specialized, I guess, than simple software, hardware, or those semiconductor businesses. But I think it also demonstrates a lot of strengths in both our economy here, as well as the overall market. Firstly, that there's been a tremendous investor interest in the stock. BT's, the Business Times this morning, I think it was Olivia Poe who wrote right. up that the stock was very heavily subscribed. Applications from retail investors were 31 times, and the international placement was covered 23 times. And big cornerstone investors included the likes of AIA, Aberdeen, Standard Investments, Credit Suisse, JP Morgan Asset Management Singapore, and of course Temasek Holdings, which is a rare cornerstone for our IPOs. I think it invested in the float indirectly through Venezio Investment. But that's the first important point. You know, tremendous investor interest. Secondly, it really shows the competitiveness of the primary and secondary market for the issuers or the companies that list. It has been put on show this morning, and the stock did command a valuation very much in line with the global tech leaders, indicating that these new Singapore tech listings are competing well with the international peers. The median price earnings ratio for the top quartile of global tech companies by market value is just below 40 times. And if you look at the pre-invitation offering earnings per share and the adjusted earnings per share and current price of this new stock, NTI at $3, the estimate P/E ratio for NTI is between 35 times and 40 times, right in there with the biggest. And thirdly, one more point, the listing's also a big testament to the supportive economic ecosystem that Singapore does have for tech startups. I mean, this business was founded back in 1999 as a high-tech spin-off from NTU, and the investors over the years have included the likes of OCBC, Lion OCBC Capital Asia, then back in 2016, then I think it's Heliconia, UOB and EDBI in 2018, and it also NTI also developed its proprietary systems, coding systems, through research and development with the help of Spring Singapore's Capability Development Grant back in 2015. So it also, and I should also point out, it designs, it manufactures, it assembles its coding equipment and develops and provides these surface solutions and all these advanced materials all in-house as well. And now the business has something like over 300 customers spanning all these multiple industries. Microsoft, Huawei, Canon, Sunny Optical are a number of them.
Dr. Xi Xu, the executive chairman of Nanofilms Technologies International Limited, said he's very excited to be listed, but he's thinking in the future he won't be the only one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our ECM team works very hard. You're talking in terms of the IPO pipeline, I hope, because that's what we all wish for. And our team, you just got to have the right economic, obviously the right economic conditions. And as a smart man once said, it does take a village. And as we say, when all the stars are aligned, as we've had in the development and the last 20 years of operation for NTI, it shows us that the system works not just well, but very well, highly competitive on the international scale.
It is an exciting day for tech, though. The US saw a lot of tech reporting overnight, mm-hmm. and the numbers were very promising.
Very promising. Looking at some of the numbers overnight also, I think Alphabet kind of ran away with things, but everybody else did fairly, pretty well, actually, for the most part. But they did also point out a lot of the tech shares have started to wobble a little bit despite this. I think this might be a carryover from the spook that happened on Wednesday when we saw markets come down significantly leading up to this, to the U.S. elections also, and also all of these new risk, the potential sources of volatility coming up also. One thing, though, for certain is I think regardless of how the U.S. elections actually transpires, usually when you have these landmark events, this is when you start to see, and I'd love to get Jeff, your thoughts on this also. Generally, when you see these big landmark events happen, this is when you start to see rotations and sort of these new rebalancings happen within the markets. And some feel that this could actually be the event that could trigger a shift away from these tech stocks. stocks and these high growth stocks back into value if that happens. What are your thoughts on that, actually, Jeff? Do you think that this could be the start of a huge rotation in global markets from these high-flying tech and growth stocks back into value? Or do you think that that this could still be dependent exactly on what the outcome might be once we get to the other side of November 3?
Yeah, well, if you look at the active investors, the long-short managers, you know, when you have these big events, longs do typically trim their positions, and of course, you see the short covering as well. Just for an air of caution, and I guess we are seeing that. You know, if you look at, like I said, the STI has pretty much followed the S&P 500 this week down. So the S&P 500 is down 5% this week. And what's led it are those top five US banks, which were down 6%. And you know, banking sectors across the world have been very highly correlated. Obviously, from a policy perspective, they're all very similar at a very similar junction at the moment in the world, and that's really expected given the impact of the overarching COVID-19 pandemic on financial services here and abroad. And remember, it's the banks are also amidst the reporting season as well. So like I said, we're highly correlated. So you've got the U.S. top five U.S. banks declining. You know, there's 6% this week. Our three listed banks, DBS, OCBC, UMB, have also generated a 5% decline this week. Nevertheless, they did start the month well, and hence all three are still in the green for October, averaging something like a 1% month to date gain with around 4 hours to go. But you know, you do see a little bit of, I guess we say that trimming or the short covering ahead of the big events. And of course, this next week we've got the three banks are all scheduled to provide their third quarter business updates. You know, UOB before the market on Wednesday, and then DBS and OCBC before the open on Thursday.
And very interesting also to see how they are going to respond, because a lot of the banks have started to face a lot of possible pressures that we've seen from the banking releases across from other global banks, which, to be fair, you can compare the likes of DBS, UOB, and OCBC to at this point. A lot of them continue to put out a lot of these credit provisions. We'll see if they'll have to outlay more of these. And I think it becomes more, I guess, from what I'm seeing here, Jeff, is when you look at these credit provisions, these loan loss provisions, they're also happening as many companies around the world start to really ramp up possible job cuts and job losses also, which could then also feed back into banks later on. So it'll be interesting to see how the likes of DBS, UOB, and OCBC address some of these growing concerns, and if also to see if their overall asset bases can withstand this prolonged pressure and uncertainty.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, you know, aside from those earnings, as you say, guidance on the loan quality and the moratoriums, you know, in addition, as you say, that preemptive provisioning and the net interest margins and non-interest income will be the big things we watch. But we should also note that, remember, that maximized capping of paying dividends at 60% of the respective FY19 distributions, current indicative FY20 yields are around 3.5% to 4%, which is still historically pretty strong for these three banks. You know, and of course, this was also the month Global Finance magazine rated DBS the best bank in the world, and of course, the trio of DBS, OCBC, and UOB, Asia's safest bank. So, there'll be a lot of interest in these banks. Also, digitalization efforts that DBS are leading as well will be obviously a big focus. But like you said, you know, the businesses on their book, it depends. You know, they've got to grow as well. And you know, we saw in the last earnings season that the key word was vigilance. It was used in multiple times across all those outlooks, and that was in the context of, you know, basically optimizing your balance sheet so that when the opportunities do present themselves, these businesses can take them. And we are seeing still elements of growth. I mean, not just the banks are reporting, but of course you've got the S-REITs that have been reporting last week, the week before, and next week, and the sector is still going for growth. Just in October month alone, we saw five of the REITs of Zara Logos Logistics, Mapletree Logistics, Elite Commercial, Suntec REIT, and Lendlease Global Commercial. Those five REITs all did announce property acquisitions. They proposed these property acquisitions, and that these locations, again, didn't just span Singapore. It was Australia, China, Malaysia, and the UK as well. But next week, you know, and next week, of course, I mean, even this afternoon, we've got big numbers. I mean, you talked about Europe. We talked about Europe at the beginning, and we've got third quarter 2020 GDP numbers for the Eurozone this afternoon.
Absolutely. I think,
it's Germany, France, and Italy are in there as well, right?
Right. Germany and France, also very interesting to look at because these are the two largest economies and two countries that have both said that they're going through month-long lockdowns next month. And, you know, Jeff, just as how busy next week is, how crazy and how busy it's going to be, the U.S. elections and all of these things seem to be overshadowing the fact that the Federal Reserve will also be making their policy decision next week, along with the RBA and the Bank of England also. And we also have all those PMI numbers, and we have Ant Group possibly listing sometime. I believe people are expecting them to actually start the trading on Shanghai and Hong Kong this coming Thursday on the 5th of November. Just too many things to deal with. Where do we start, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you want to focus on tech, well, then there's something next week as well. Yes, we remember the significant highlight from our PMI last month in September was, remember that electronics PMI?
Yes.
It was at its highest level in 2 years, September 2018. And then, of course, we've got retail sales as well. But, you know, I think the most pressing number we're looking for is these GDP numbers. The ECB last night said they would keep monetary policy unchanged. However, the Governor Lagarde in that press conference did suggest further stimulus as the information comes in. And of course, you know that you can't understate, as you said, the containments that are currently going through in Europe, particularly Germany, because that resurgence of COVID-19 in Europe, I think it's seen as many as 1.5 million cases in the past 7 days, and that brings its total cases up to 10.3 million. So that's been a significant increase over the last week or so.
There are so many things to keep track of, Jeff. It's almost going to be like we're drinking out of a fire hose, don't you think?
Yeah. We'll be all tuning in to get your take on the hour.
And they'll tune in next week, at the end of next week, to see if I got things right or wrong, and if you think it's hogwash, right?
That's the report card.
There you go.
Yeah. We'll be listening.
Maybe we need Jeff on more than once next week.
Only if his schedule permits. I'm sure he's a busy man. We're not the only ones asking Jeff what he thinks.
we'll get more of the Business Time reporters on. They're definitely going to have their work cut out for them next week.
There is a lot to talk about next week. Now, JP, you said there was going to be reporting from Wilmar
sometime today. I believe that they are set to do a business update, if I'm not mistaken. And I think the question today is, okay, yes, we are seeing that the Straits Times Index is trading in the red, but there are signs of a bit of fight back whenever you come to the end of these long stretches of losses. We are seeing so far that the STI currently is down by about 15 points at the moment. But again, we've got a whole afternoon ahead of us. So if anybody is in the mood for a fight back on the markets, you've got 4 hours, basically.
Well, maybe Wilma will be providing some of that fight.
We'll see.
They're up a little bit now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think also it would be interesting from Wilmar to see what their updates are with regards to that listing out in Shenzhen, the Yihai Carrier Arawana listing on the Chinex board, and how that and more details perhaps on how that figures into their overall growth strategy. It's been a very big last couple of weeks for Wilmar International, and this is just probably the icing on the cake.
All right. So as far as all that tech reporting that came out of the U.S., who do you think is going to be buying dinner among the tech billionaires over the weekend?
I'm going to say I don't think it's going to be Tim Cook. I have my bet's going, and definitely not Mark Zuckerberg. He's got a lot too much heat on him at the moment. I might bet on the folks over at Zoom. Can you believe this? Zoom fell by about 5% overnight last night. But guess what? They now have a bigger market cap than ExxonMobil. If you told me that 20 years ago, of course, Zoom didn't exist 20 years ago. But if you told me that 20 years ago, I would say, yeah, when pigs fly. But apparently, there's a lechon in the air.
Well, maybe Bill Gates, though.
Possible.
I think Clarissa would love Elon Musk, right? And you can watch Starlight together.
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. Well, he takes me on a ride on one of his silent cars. And on that note, this has been a very busy and very information-packed Market View Wrap on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero in the studio with finance presenter JP Ong, and on the phone with Jeff Howie, strategic market analyst from the SGX.
Before acting on the information on Money FM,
Please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.